Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Legislation is changing. Budgets are shifting. And terms like one big beautiful bill can feel anything but beautiful. That's where BHM CPA Group steps in. BHM's purpose is to simplify the complex. Their team is trained to meet today's challenges with real-world solutions in tax, accounting, and business planning. Get the clarity you deserve so that your business can thrive. Don't wait. Visit bhmcpagroup.com. That's bhmcpagroup.com. BHM, because running a business is hard enough. Your finances shouldn't be.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of CARE Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call CARE Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Let's move on to another case here that also involves mental health. A Kentucky sheriff walked into a judge's chambers, locked the doors, and fired 9 rounds into the man that he'd known for years. That part was caught on camera. But according to newly filed civil lawsuit documents, the 2 weeks leading up to that moment looked like a textbook mental health crisis. And almost everyone around Mickey Stein saw it happening. Rapid weight loss, days without sleep, paranoid claims that unnamed people were threatening his family. And the day of the shooting, witnesses say he was making phone calls trying to reach his grandmother, who'd been dead for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So we talk about warning signs, about intervention, about what happens when someone spirals towards violence in plain sight. This case hands us a brutal case study. Psychotherapist Siobhan Scott is here with us to help break all this down. The court documents describe Steins as experiencing severe insomnia, the rapid weight loss, extreme paranoia, and the very strange behavior. In the 2 weeks prior to the shooting, from a clinical standpoint, what is that constellation of symptoms suggest to you might be happening?
Acute psychotic mania. It is classic mania. And this can happen in people who are typically high functioning. They're not, you know, the low functioning person with schizophrenia, you know, it can come on quickly. There may have been a history of it or there may not have been. Did he have the classic bipolar disorder with episodes of depression? And sometimes the depression can be relatively mild, but that would be my guess, because the insomnia, the weight loss, the paranoia, the psychotic thinking, the disorganized behavior, this guy needed to be in the hospital. He needed to be psychiatrically hospitalized. And I can't imagine that any trained mental health person would not have seen this and flagged it and said, we need to get him inpatient. Well,
and here's what took place, allegedly. According to the folks around him, there had been a lot of people that were noticing this. One of the attorneys in the courthouse there even contacted their bar association going, what do I do with this sheriff? There's something's not right going on here. Some of his staff allegedly even went with him to his general practitioner. He said, I'll go to the doctor. You know, as everybody says when someone, let me go to the doctor. Then you go to your general care physician, who's not remotely qualified in most cases to be delving out mental health advice. Right. But people don't know this. This is just like kind of a common misconception, amazingly, but it is. And then if you're not going to your general care physician, and when they're asking you, you know, are you having psychotic delusions? Are you doing this? Are you depressed? Are you anxious? And your answer is no to every single one of those things. Mm-hmm. It's not a whole lot one can do. Now, is there?
Mm-hmm. I would love to live in a world where physicians all had more training in how to spot mental health disorders. And it's another important thing, you know, when he went to the doctor, did he just go in alone?
Yeah.
Because you're right. He's not going to necessarily self-report how bizarre his behavior is.
He might even be aware of it because he's thinking.
He's not aware. He's thinking he's fine. And so this is where I always encourage people who are noticing the behavior, make sure you talk to the doctor. You give the information. Even if they can't, because of HIPAA, they can't talk to you back, you can always call and say, you know, the sheriff is coming in. Let me give you a heads up on what has been happening. So that can cue the doctor like, oh, we do need to call the mental health crisis folks here, because this is just a tragedy, absolute tragedy, because Sheriff Steins was probably a great guy until he lost his mind here. Now, the other thing I'll throw out, this kind of crisis can also happen. We see a lot of it with meth use. And so a person who has a very good brain can do a bunch of meth and they can have a manic, terrible paranoid manic psychotic episode. I doubt that that's what happened here, because I've also seen it happen in just people where something goes wrong biologically and this is what happens. But it's something that you definitely need a professional to get their eyes on them right away and get them in a safe place and definitely get the guns away from them.
Well, and I feel like law enforcement has an even higher responsibility. You've got people who have weapons in their hands.
Yes.
If you're seeing something like this, something needs to be done immediately for everybody's safety.
Definitely.
I want to talk about, you had mentioned Matthews, and again, that's not part of the case or anything like that. I mean, it's an observation, you know, of this sort of behavior. But what about other triggering events, stressors, anxiety? What we do know of what was going on in this man's life was that there had been depositions that were being given in another case involving improprietary, use of the judge's chambers. There was allegations of sexual improprieties, of SA, of all sort, not necessarily against the judge directly or the sheriff, but people within their ecosystem, people that they worked with, people that they were in charge of. One of Mickey Stein's subordinates was already facing charges, already had been charged with this. And there's been a lot of allegations swirling that there was a lot of shady sexual shit going on in that court with some of those people. I'm not saying that these people were involved, but it seemed to be quite a stressful moment, to put it lightly, in these people's lives. And it all seemed, the behavior seemed to be stemming out of those depositions and out of being put on the spot to try and take accountability or say what he knew about those sort of situations. Could things like that, if these sort of things are coming to light, could that trigger an episode or something like this where he's, you know, he's calling his dead grandma?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because yes, it's not common, but in somebody who's got, let's say, the biological vulnerability, they've got a sensitivity in their neurobiology to this kind of thing, extreme stress can set off a manic episode. So it's possible that that was one factor, because a lot of times it's not just one thing. You've got several things all together. The other thing that can set it off for people with this tendency is international travel and time zone changes can set it off. We also see more of this kind of thing happen in summer. And so that's an area of research that is it something about the change of seasons where you'll see more people have breaks, psychotic breaks like this. So I think there are a lot of environmental factors that are unique and different for every person. But I have a client who's a bipolar, and she's very, very stable and on all the right medications and lives an effective life. You know, she functions well. But if they take a trip and she goes through a time zone change, she has learned she has to increase her medication because it can trigger a manic episode on vacation. And so this is the fascinating thing about the brain, is how it can go haywire. And
well, I mean, just, I mean, this just theoretically speaking here, because this is a whole, you know, all of those allegations are out in the ether. Let's just for example, let's say the following scenario is true, and I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying, if you knew that there was some sexual improprieties going on within your office, maybe you had something to do with it. Maybe some shit was going to come out on you or someone very close to you in the very near future that was going to completely upend, destroy, ruin your life, reputation, and everything around you. That might be one of the biggest stressors anyone could ever feel in their lives, which I would think would be somewhat of a triggering factor. When I'm looking at this case as a whole, that's kind of what I'm seeing. I mean, again, we don't know all those. There's so many allegations there, and that can be litigated in its own world. But if that is the impetus of all of this, is all this coming out, and then this is what triggered this, it kind of makes for the perfect storm in some cases.
Yeah, it is a perfect storm. It can definitely be from an extreme stressor, and so that's a certainly plausible explanation. Another time that we see it happen a lot is in boot camp for you know, young men who maybe have no symptoms of mental health problems, but they've got some vulnerability, they're sensitive, and they're in boot camp, and all of a sudden, because of the lack of sleep and the intense pressure they're under, that's a high risk time, and so they can have a psychotic break.
Don't all minds have a breaking point at some place? I mean, under a certain amount of stress, couldn't any of us break to the point of thinking we're going to call our dead grandmother? I mean, if you're under, I can't imagine being in the situation that Steins might have been in, if all that is true, and then trying to function in any way, shape, or form. I just wonder, you know, once one gets to that point, then things start going haywire. Are there different levels of the delusions here, of the psychotic, behavior that was going on? Because you have the part where he's talking about, you know, being paranoid for the safety of his wife and children, having his wife put on a bulletproof vest, that sort of stuff. Okay, that's paranoia. That's a lot of anxiety there. But then you go to calling dead people.
Right.
That seems to be like another level.
It is another level. And I think all humans have breaking points when it comes to how much stress can we take. And all of us on this show have probably had a point where we felt like, I'm cracking here, you know, just because stress affects people. That's normal. And that's not really a mental health condition in any way, although it can feel like it at the time. But what people usually experience, people who don't have a vulnerability to psychosis, usually experience tearfulness, They can't get out of bed. They go into a major depression. They start panic attacks are very, very common. When we say somebody's having a nervous breakdown, a lot of times it's crying. They can't stop panic attacks. And, you know, I often say going through grief, people are tearful. But if you're crying for 3 days, you know, straight and you can't stop, you know, this is, you're having a mental health crisis. And so going into psychosis is, I don't think, something that everybody does. That's, mm-hmm. that's, you know, and again, it may mean they've never had that symptom before. So you don't know, do you have a vulnerability to that?
Well, and it doesn't help to have people, you know, saying, snap out of it, you know, deal with
right.
it. What do you do if you are in that situation? What do you do? Maybe you've had something really stressful happen and you're going down that path. What do you do?
Yeah, that's where you call someone like me. If you can't get in to see a therapist right away, again, going back to the community mental health crisis line, give them a call. There's the national, is it 911, the national, you know, psychiatric support.
Oh, the 988.
988, thank you. 911, yeah, you don't have to, although you can call 911,
sure.
but call 988 if it's just an emotional kind of thing, because sometimes just having someone to vent to and someone to talk about the stress can de-escalate it a lot. And so call the helpline. The other thing people can do if let's say, you know, I've seen this many times, they're hyperventilating, they're shaking, they feel like they're having a heart attack, you can go into an emergency room, and emergency room staff are supposed to be trained how to, you know, screen for a mental health emergency, get the social worker in to talk to someone, and try to do referrals for ongoing support. If there's a local psychiatric hospital that has any openings that you can get somebody in, often they go from an emergency room into an inpatient psychiatric facility if they're really, really, you know, in bad shape. So that's sort of, you know, kind of the chain that you can follow. If it's an acute emergency and you feel like the hotline isn't enough, because panic attacks are what really scare people. They think they're having a heart attack. And so the hospital emergency room, they can rule that out really quickly and tell you, no, it's a panic attack. But, you know, that's probably the fastest route.
Yeah. Well, there's so much with this case. There's so much with all of this. There's a civil suit that's been. We're learning a lot of these facts because of the civil suit, not the actual criminal trial that's coming up. A civil suit that's been filed by the widow of the judge against three of the staffers of the sheriff, basically stating, well, they should have warned the judge. And it sounds like they did everything they could. I mean, it really sounds like everybody saw something, said something. I get, you know, people want to find a villain here. People want to find, well, this could have been done. I don't know that this is the right route to take, to be suing staff members that, you know, for their superior when they were saying, hey, something's off here. They only have so much that they could actually legally do as well without putting themselves in some sort of danger.
And it's also complicated by the fact that he was the superior.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, he was the boss. He had the power. And I think if your supervisor, the sheriff, is the one that you're having to figure out how in the world do we navigate this, that's another layer of complexity for these people. And it does sound like they tried.
And navigate it with knowledge of all these allegations that are flowing around this big ball of wrong of this sort of impropriety, that sort of impropriety, again, allegations, but all pieces that would be going through someone's mind of what do I say? What do I do? Other than he seems off. There's some, they're not his handler. They're not his babysitter. Mm-hmm. They don't need to go to every single person he's about to interact with and go, hey, by the way, he holds a gun. He has the potential to shoot you.
Exactly.
I think everybody kind of knows that. And then if they're going to sit around and wait for that, that's up to them. But the reality is nobody knew he was going to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't think he knew he was going to do this probably until that moment.
It was probably very, very impulsive on his part. Yeah.
They had had lunch together. I mean, everything seemed fine. And all of a sudden, guess what I'm going to do? The way it unfolded, it just screams that this was not something that was planned.
It seems like a bizarre lawsuit. I don't even know what to make of it. I mean, I can't imagine being the widow going through this shit. I can't imagine being the widow going through this shit and also hearing these allegations about my husband either floating around and trying to process that and go, is this real? He's gone. Mm-hmm. Can't answer for it. And you're just left with the, who do I believe? You know, that's that I can't imagine. So I don't want to be too harsh on her. I get everybody's trying to look for a villain here, but I don't think this is the path, in my opinion, in that route. We'll keep watching this. The trial is looking to be 2026. We'll follow it as it gets closer. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, thank you so much for being on and giving us your insight as always. Her book, Nightbird, available wherever books are sold. Get it. If you go right now to Amazon or whatever, you can probably get it in time for the holidays. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to see you until after the holidays. So happy holidays
to
you.
Happy holidays.
And thank you again for another wonderful year of being a very valuable contributor to this program, Siobhan.
This is always my delightful hour of the week. I love it. Such good questions.
Well, thank you so much, Siobhan, for being a part of it. And thank you guys for being a part of it as well. We'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. You can always leave those anytime. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Until next time, for Siobhan, for Todd, for Stacey, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. Is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Here's the thing about this case that's going to stay with me long after this trial is over, long after whatever verdict comes down, long after Mickey Steins either spends the rest of his life in prison or walks on an insanity defense. It's not the shooting itself. It's not the video. It's not even the 9 bullets, 7 of them fired into a man who was already on the ground. It's the week before, because what we're learning about now, these new developments in this case, put everything into perspective. Because when you go through the court documents, when you read the witness statements and the police interviews and the filings from both sides, you realize something that should make all of us deeply uncomfortable. People saw this coming. Not one person, not two people, multiple people. Across multiple days, watch Mickey Steins come apart at the seams, allegedly. They talked about it. They documented it. Some of them even tried to do something about it. But then we run into the system that doesn't do a whole lot when a mental health crisis is at hand. Hands are tied. And now Kevin Mullins is dead. Daniel Dotson is an attorney. He was friends with both Steins and Mullins, and in the days before the shooting, he watched Steins deteriorate to the point where he felt compelled to act. He urged Steins to get a mental health evaluation. When Steins said he'd see his family doctor, Dotson didn't just accept that and move on. He was so alarmed by what he was seeing that he contacted the Kentucky Bar Association to ask what action he could take. Think about that, a lawyer calling his professional licensing body, trying to figure out if there's anything he can do to intervene in a situation that hasn't become a crime yet. He also went directly to Judge Mullins, allegedly warned him to his face, told him Mickey Steins was losing it, told him he couldn't handle the pressure he was under. According to court documents, Dotson described Steins as exhibiting symptoms consistent with paranoid schizophrenia. He's not a psychiatrist. He's a small-town Kentucky attorney watching his friend fall apart and trying to sound the alarm and use the words that he knows to use to describe behavior that is not healthy or normal. The local police chief, Tyrone Fields, talked to Dotson about Steins. According to testimony, after one of their conversations, Fields said, "That son of a bitch has lost his mind." So we have an attorney who contacted the Bar Association, a police chief who recognized something was catastrophically wrong, a direct warning delivered to the eventual victim. And that's just the people outside the sheriff's office. Inside the office, staff were watching their boss unravel in real time. Christine Bowling, one of the employees now named in the widow's civil lawsuit, told investigators she observed very strange behavior the day before the shooting. Steins allegedly told her that Daniel Dotson had instructed him to hand over money and kill himself, or else they were going to murder his wife and daughter. That's the allegation. He didn't say who they were, just said they were coming. Steins insisted on going home to check on his family. Maybe someone help put a bulletproof vest on his wife. He had people call to check on his daughter. According to court documents, all this was captured on Ring camera footage. Staff members told Kentucky State Police that Steins was making phone calls to relatives who had been dead for years. One staffer said his anxiety was completely off the charts, said she believed he was in psychosis. Now, there's two directions this story is going to lead out from, and we're going to talk about one of them. We're going to go down the warning signs path today. Now, why he was in this state, how he got here, did something trigger this psychosis? That's another conversation, and one we will certainly have on this channel. We've already started to have some of that. But it's hard to discuss two things simultaneously. So we're going to go down the warning sign path today on this video. But trust me, it's not lost on me. What's going over here that caused this level of anxiety? And there's a lot. There's a lot in that pile, that heaping pile of shit over here, too. As we go through this, your thoughts in the comments section, I'd love to see them. We do read them, so please leave them. Please press subscribe while you're at it. If you're listening to us on YouTube, we do greatly appreciate that. And on Apple Podcasts, too, if you're over there, press subscribe. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, leave us a quick review. That helps us in the rankings, and we do greatly appreciate it. At least two of his employees convinced him to see his doctor the day before the shooting. Friends accompanied him to the appointment because they were worried about his level of stress and his inability to sleep. The doctor examined him, and according to the medical records that have been filed in court, Steins was very subdued but denied any depression, anxiety, psychosis, suicidal or homicidal thoughts, and the doctor diagnosed him with acute stress reaction and sent him home. From what we understand, the accusation is this was a general practitioner, not a psychiatrist, not a psychologist, not someone with expertise in that area of study who you'd really want to go to in a mental health crisis. I'm not faulting the friends. I'm not faulting him. I'm faulting our system in general, that we don't think that way, that that's not just the, okay, you're having a mental health crisis, let's get you to a mental health professional. Because the general practitioner, well-intentioned, not the one that's super qualified to be looking at mental health crises for what they are. And you're also relying on the person. Again, this is the autonomy thing, the issues that we saw over in the Rob Reiner case. We're relying on them to make the right decision and express the right things at the right time in the doctor's office to get the right treatment, when they are quite often the least capable of doing exactly that. After the appointment, he allegedly walked into the Judge Mullen's chambers and shot him 9 times. So here's my question. What exactly were these people supposed to do? Dotson warned the victim, contacted the bar, pushed Steins towards professional help. What else? He's not Steins' employer. He can't fire him. He can't take his gun. He can't force him into a psychiatric hold. He's a friend and a colleague watching a crisis unfold with no authority to actually stop it. The police chief recognized something was wrong. But the police chief doesn't have authority over the sheriff. In Kentucky, the sheriff is an elected official. He answers to voters, not to other law enforcement. You can't just call up the county commission and say, hey, the sheriff's gone crazy. Can you suspend him? It doesn't work that way. The staff inside the sheriff's office were in an even worse position. The man they were watching deteriorate was their boss, the elected sheriff, the person who controls their employment, their assignments, their professional futures. They got him to the doctor. That's what they could do. And even that probably took courage, because telling your boss he needs professional help is not a conversation most people are particularly eager to have. And the doctor examined a patient who denied every symptom that would have justified intervention. You can't involuntarily commit someone who sits in your office and says, I'm good. There's no legal mechanism to override that, unfortunately. The doctor had no documented threat, no explicit statement of intent to harm, just a man who was clearly under enormous stress, but who, when asked directly, said he wasn't experiencing psychosis and wasn't thinking about hurting anyone. Everyone did something. That's what kills me about this case. These weren't bystanders who looked the other way. These were people who saw a crisis developing and took action within the limits of what they could actually do. And it wasn't enough. Not because they didn't try hard enough, because the systems we've built don't give people like them any real power to stop something like this. Let's talk about those symptoms for a second. Kentucky, like most states, has laws governing involuntary psychiatric commitment to hospitalize someone against their will. You have to show that the person has a diagnosed mental illness, that they present a danger to themselves or others imminently, and that they can benefit from treatment, and that they're unlikely to seek treatment voluntarily. The key words there is danger. And danger in this context means actual imminent threat. Not he's acting weird, not he's paranoid and delusional, not he's calling dead relatives and talking about assassination plots. That doesn't work. Even that doesn't work. You need a threat, something concrete, by the standards of how we handle these things. Something that would hold up in front of a judge, even though it would hold up to the common sense of everyone around. It needs to meet that standard. And that standard isn't always defined with the words common sense. Steins wasn't making explicit threats. He was deteriorating. Yes, he was clearly disconnected from reality in some ways, according to those around him. But he wasn't telling people he was going to hurt anyone. He was telling people he was afraid someone was going to hurt his family. That's not the same thing, legally speaking. And so involuntary commitment options weren't really an option at all the way that they are designed to work as of right now. What about removing him from office? Well, Kentucky has processes for that, too. The governor can remove a sheriff for cause, misconduct, corruption, malfeasance, but I think he might be mentally ill. He's saying crazy things isn't on that list. You would also need formal proceedings, documented evidence of specific failures, hearings, judicial determinations, and that takes time. Days, weeks, months, years. Mickey Steins didn't give anyone months. He gave them hours. And by the time anyone could have initiated formal removal proceedings, Kevin Mullins was dead. Some states have what are called red flag laws or extreme risk protection orders. These allow family members, law enforcement, or in some cases, medical professionals to petition a court to temporarily remove firearms from someone who poses a risk to themselves or others. It's a way to disarm someone during a mental health crisis without having to go through the full inventory or involuntary commitment process. Kentucky, surprise, surprise, doesn't have one. So even if Stein's wife or his staff, Daniel Dotson, had wanted to get his gun away from him, there was no legal mechanism to do that, short of involuntary commitment, which, as we've discussed, wasn't available. There was no way to separate Mickey Steins from his firearm. And here's the thing that makes this case particularly brutal. Steins wasn't just some guy. He was the sheriff, the elected sheriff of Lecter County. which means he wasn't just entitled to carry a firearm. It was part of his job. He had lawful access to the courthouse. He had lawful access to the judge's chambers. He had a badge and a gun and the authority that comes with both. They were buddies. They had lunch together. And nobody had the power to take any of that away from him without a formal legal process that would have taken longer than the crisis allowed. This is what I keep calling the authority paradox. Our systems for intervening in mental health crises assume that the person in crisis is in some sort of subordinate position, which they're usually not. Family members can push for commitment because they have emotional leverage. Employers can mandate fitness for duty evaluations because they control employment. Institutions can override individual autonomy for their own good because institutions have power. But what happens when the person in crisis is the authority? This. When the person falling apart is the one everyone reports to? When the person making the calls to dead relatives and talking about assassination plots is the person who controls the courthouse, carries the gun legally, and can't be fired by anyone? Well, that playbook doesn't work then. The intervention strategies we've developed assume someone with more power can step in, but Mickey Steins had the most power of anyone in that building. His staff couldn't suspend him. The county commission couldn't remove him unilaterally. The governor wasn't going to act on secondhand reports of strange behavior. And so everyone just watched. And they did what they could. Hoped it would get better, hoped the doctor's visit would fix it, hoped that whatever was happening would resolve itself before it became catastrophic. That's the other piece of this, the psychology, because even when the systems fail, humans still have choices. And one of the things we know from decades of research into crisis intervention is that people are remarkably good at hoping things get better instead of taking dramatic action. It's called normalcy bias, the assumption that because things have always been basically okay, they'll continue to be basically okay. Mickey Steins had been sheriff for 8 years. He'd worked with Kevin Mullins even longer than that. These were people who knew each other, trusted each other, had lunch together the day of the shooting. It's hard to look at someone you've known for years and accept that they've become genuinely dangerous, either to believe it's temporary. Easier to believe he's just stressed. And it's easier to wait and see. There's also diffusion of responsibility. When multiple people witness a crisis, each one tends to assume someone else will handle it. This is not an indictment on those who tried to help him. And there were many of them. Dotson warned people. Staff talked to each other. Everyone knew something was wrong, but everyone also assumed that someone else, someone with more authority, more expertise, more power, would be the one to actually stop it. The doctor will handle it, right? The county will handle it. The state will handle it. Something. Someone. Someone will do something. And because everyone assumed someone else would act, no one took the kind of dramatic, career-risking, relationship-destroying action that might have actually made a difference. And honestly, even if someone had been willing to take that kind of action, what would that have looked like? Call 911 and say, hey, I think the sheriff is having a mental breakdown. Please come arrest him. File a petition for involuntary commitment based on what exactly? Secondhand accounts of paranoid statements? The fact that he lost 40 pounds in 2 weeks? They're alarming symptoms. They're not evidence that would satisfy a court. The gap between this person is clearly unwell and this person meets the legal criteria for forced intervention is enormous, and people die in that gap all the time. And it's not because no one cared, not because no one tried, because caring and trying aren't enough when the law requires you to wait for danger that's imminent. By the time danger is imminent, it's usually too late to stop it. Kimberly Mullins, the judge's widow, has filed that civil lawsuit against Steins and three of his employees. The lawsuit claims they had a duty to warn Judge Mullins about Steins' deteriorating mental state, claims they had a duty to control Steins to prevent him from having unsupervised access to the man he would allegedly kill. The employees' defense attorneys have already responded. They argue that Kentucky law clearly holds that the defendants had no duty to warn or protect Judge Mullins, that the employees were not aware of any specific intent or plan to kill, that you can't hold someone liable for failing to stop something they didn't know was coming. And here's the uncomfortable truth. They're probably right. Legally speaking, these employees are being asked to answer for a failure that was in many ways structural, not their responsibility, and didn't actually have any levers of power to pull to prevent anything from happening. They didn't have the authority to remove Steins from duty. They didn't have the power to take his weapon. They didn't have the standing to initiate commitment proceedings. They did what subordinates do when their boss is in crisis. They expressed concern. They encouraged him to seek help. They documented what they saw. And now they're being sued for not doing more? I get you're angry. This is not the right path to take. I'm not saying the lawsuit is wrong, although maybe I kind of am. Kimberly Mullins lost her husband. Her daughters lost their father. That's horrible. Someone should be held accountable, but the lawsuit is asking the legal system to assign blame for a failure that the legal system itself made almost inevitable. These employees are being held responsible for not doing something that arguably they couldn't do. So what's the answer? I don't know. I'm not sure anyone does. Red flag laws might help. Access to mental health services, being able to put people in institutions without their consent might be helpful when you have multiple people going, there's something really wrong with this guy. Now, yes, can that be abused? That's a whole other conversation. But if we do it sensibly, you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. If Kentucky had extreme risk protection order statutes, maybe someone could have petitioned to remove Steins' firearms while his mental state was assessed. That wouldn't have prevented him from accessing the courthouse, but it would have made the shooting harder to carry out. Clearer protocols for elected officials might help. Some mechanism for temporary suspension when there's documented evidence of incapacity, even if it's short of a formal removal process, a way to say this person needs to step back until we figure out what's happening without requiring a full judicial proceeding. But then training for people around authority figures might be helpful too. Not just see something, say something, but actual guidance on escalation. Who do you call when your elected boss is making calls to dead relatives? Put that in the handbook. What documentation do you need? What are your legal protections if you report on concerns and it blows up in your face? I think a lot of us think these things exist, and then we're surprised when they don't. And then we move on to the next thing. You're like, oh yeah, that never got corrected, did it? No, it didn't. But all these solutions have trade-offs. Easier commitment processes mean more civil liberty violations. Red flag laws can be abused. Giving unelected officials power to suspend elected ones undermines democratic accountability. Every fix it might have prevented this shooting, it creates new problems and new opportunities for abuse, new ways for the system to fail in different directions. But throwing our hands up in the air and saying, well, they could do all this, and doing absolutely nothing isn't exactly a solution either. What I keep coming back to is this. The people around Mickey Steins did what our society tells them to do. They expressed concern. They encouraged professional help. They hoped things would get better, and it wasn't enough. Not because they failed, but because hoping things get better is not a crisis intervention strategy. It's a way of avoiding the discomfort of real intervention while telling ourselves we did our part. Kevin Mullins was warned by a friend who cared enough to contact the Bar Association, by a police chief who recognized something was catastrophically wrong, by the evidence of his own eyes, presumably watching the man who used to be his bailiff, transform into someone else entirely. And he still let Steins into his chambers. He didn't think this was going to happen. Still in a 17-minute conversation. Still didn't have anyone protecting him from a threat that multiple people had identified, but no one had the power to stop or truly identify as a threat. He's acting weird. He's acting strange. He wasn't running around the courthouse going, I'm going to go shoot the judge. This is not a story about villains and heroes. It's not a story about people who didn't care. A story about a gap in our system that we don't like to talk about is what this is. A space between seeing a crisis and having the power to stop it. The distance between someone should do something and actually having the authority and legal standing, the institutional backing, to do what needs to be done. Mickey Steins is going to trial. His defense is insanity. The prosecution says he knew what he was doing. A jury will decide which story they believe. But whatever they decide, it won't change the fact that this tragedy had witnesses at every stage. People who saw it coming, people who tried to help, people who are now being sued for not doing more. The question we should be asking isn't why they failed. They didn't fail. The system failed. The question is whether we're willing to build something better before the next crisis falls into the same gap and leaves another family planning a funeral for someone who should still be alive. Your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. Love to hear them. We do read them. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. That's where you will find us on YouTube or wherever you get podcasts. So leave us your comments and your thoughts there. Please do press subscribe. And if you got a moment, if you've not done so already on Apple Podcasts, please, if you could, leave us a review. It helps us in the rankings tremendously, lets other folks know we exist and brings them into our fold and our community here that we're talking about true crime with every single day with the Hidden Killers podcast. So please, if you don't mind, if you got a few seconds, you like what we're doing, a few kind words there on Apple Podcasts in the review section does wonders. Thank you in advance for that. Seriously. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date, it notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap. Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.